England, 1884. In a society that admired elegance above virtue and appearances above character, few men were discussed more often than Duke Edmund Ascombe. His estates stretched across several counties, his family name carried centuries of prestige, and his fortune was large enough to attract the attention of nearly every ambitious family in London. Yet despite all he possessed, the Duke remained one of the loneliest men in England. At 34, Edmund lived mostly within the quiet walls of Ascombe Hall, a grand estate surrounded by ancient oaks and rolling countryside. 10 years earlier, a riding accident had stolen his sight and altered the course of his life. The injury had healed, but the blindness remained. Since then, society had gradually decided what sort of man he must be. Some considered him tragic. Others considered him incomplete. Very few bothered to know him. The ton spoke of him with the same mixture of pity and fascination, usually reserved for a fallen hero. Young ladies admired his title, but feared the life that would accompany it. Mothers encouraged introductions, hoping for advantageous marriages, only to quietly redirect their daughters toward more conventional gentlemen. Edmund understood these things better than people realized. Blindness had sharpened his hearing and his awareness of others. He could detect hesitation hidden beneath polite words. He could recognize forced smiles through changes in tone. He could hear disappointment when a woman learned that the wealthy duke she had imagined could never watch her enter a ballroom or admire her beauty across a crowded room. People believed he lived in darkness. What they never understood was that he saw human nature more clearly than most. On a cold November evening, he attended a gathering in London after months of avoiding social events. The ballroom glittered with crystal chandeliers, orchestras filled the air with music, and conversations drifted like smoke through the crowded hall. Edmund stood near a marble column, listening rather than participating. A group of young women lingered nearby. "He is handsome, they say," one whispered. "A pity he cannot see," another replied. "Would you marry him?" A brief silence followed. "Not if I had another choice." The women laughed softly. The sound was not cruel enough to cause scandal, yet not kind enough to be forgotten. Edmund offered a polite smile and turned away before anyone noticed he had heard every word. Moments like these no longer surprised him. They simply reminded him why he preferred solitude. Several days later, he returned to Ascombe Hall with relief. There, life followed a calmer rhythm. He spent his mornings reviewing estate matters, his afternoons reading through assistants who recited books aloud, and his evenings writing letters concerning charitable projects. Among his greatest interests was a foundation supporting soldiers who had lost their sight in service to the crown. Unlike many nobles, Edmund understood hardship firsthand. The foundation became one of the few pursuits that gave genuine meaning to his days. Meanwhile, nearly 200 miles away, another member of England's aristocracy struggled with a different kind of loneliness. Lady Mina Fairchild, Duchess of Wexford, was 24 years old and admired throughout society. Newspapers praised her beauty. Artists requested permission to paint her portrait. Eligible bachelors competed relentlessly for her attention. From the outside, her life appeared perfect. Yet Mina often felt like an actress trapped inside a role she had never chosen. At dinners, men complimented her appearance before asking a single question about her interests. At parties, conversations rarely moved beyond fashion, marriages, or family connections. Whenever she attempted to discuss literature, education, or social reform, eyes glazed over with boredom. People admired her face. Almost nobody cared about her thoughts. The realization exhausted her. Rather than seeking excitement, Mina found comfort in quieter pursuits. She read novels late into the night, sketched landscapes during her travels, and supported schools for children whose families could not afford education. She longed for sincerity in a world increasingly governed by performance. When an invitation arrived requesting her involvement in a charitable initiative supporting blind veterans, she accepted immediately. The project required cooperation with several benefactors. Among them was Duke Edmund Ascombe. Mina knew his reputation, of course. Everyone did. The blind duke. The tragic nobleman. The man society pitied. Yet something about those descriptions felt incomplete. Several weeks later, Her carriage rolled through the gates of Ashcombe Hall beneath a gray autumn sky. The estate was impressive without being ostentatious, elegant without appearing cold. As she stepped inside, she found herself unexpectedly nervous. A servant guided her toward the library. The door opened. Edmund stood near the fireplace. He turned toward the sound of her footsteps. For a brief moment, neither spoke. Then he smiled warmly and welcomed her. The smile was genuine. Not practiced. Not charming for effect. Simply sincere. As Mina crossed the room, she felt the first quiet stirring of curiosity. And for the first time in many years, Edmund found himself looking forward to a conversation, before it had even begun. The meeting in Ashcombe Hall was intended to last a single afternoon. Instead, it became the beginning of something neither Edmund nor Mina anticipated. Their discussion about charitable work stretched far beyond practical matters. They spoke of books they admired, villages they hoped to improve, and the quiet responsibilities that accompany privilege. When Mina finally departed, she carried with her an unfamiliar sense of disappointment. She found herself wishing the conversation had continued. Edmund experienced a similar feeling. For years, most visitors had approached him with caution, pity, or carefully rehearsed politeness. Mina had done none of those things. She had spoken to him naturally, challenged several of his opinions, and listened with genuine interest when he explained his plans for supporting blind veterans. Most remarkably, she had never once treated him as fragile. Over the following weeks, correspondence passed between them with increasing frequency. What began as letters regarding charitable projects gradually evolved into something more personal. Mina shared observations from her travels. Edmund recommended books from his library. They debated literature, discussed social reform, and exchanged reflections about loneliness, purpose, and expectation. Each letter seemed easier to write than the last. Each response became more eagerly anticipated. As winter settled across England, their friendship deepened. Mina visited Ashcombe Hall several times under perfectly respectable circumstances. Every visit strengthened her admiration for the man hidden beneath society's assumptions. She observed how servants trusted him completely. She noticed how villagers greeted him with genuine affection. She learned that he quietly funded schools, paid medical expenses for struggling families, and remembered details about people most aristocrats would never notice. His blindness had not diminished his capacity for leadership. If anything, it had sharpened his compassion. The more Mina learned, the less she understood society's judgment. Meanwhile, Edmund found himself increasingly aware of her presence. He recognized the rhythm of her footsteps before she entered a room. He noticed subtle changes in her voice when she was amused or troubled. He anticipated her questions and looked forward to her laughter. For the first time since losing his sight, another person occupied his thoughts with unsettling regularity. That realization frightened him. Friendship felt safe. Anything beyond friendship felt dangerous. Mina was young, admired, and free to choose from countless suitors. He was a blind duke whose best years seemed long behind him. The disparity appeared impossible to ignore. Consequently, whenever their conversations drifted toward personal territory, Edmund instinctively retreated. He became more formal, more guarded, more careful. Mina noticed the change immediately. She did not understand its cause, but she felt its effect. Whenever she attempted to move closer emotionally, he seemed to place another barrier between them. His restraint frustrated her more than she cared to admit. By spring, London society had become fascinated by their growing association. Whispers circulated through drawing rooms and ballrooms. Speculation flourished wherever aristocrats gathered. Some insisted Mina merely admired Edmund's charitable efforts. Others suggested she was motivated by sympathy. A few claimed she hoped to reform him into a more active social figure. Nobody guessed the truth because the truth appeared too improbable. Mina herself had not fully admitted it. Not yet. The realization arrived gradually rather than dramatically. It appeared in small moments. When she found herself searching every crowded room for Edmund's presence. When she compared every conversation to those she shared with him. When a compliment from another gentleman left her indifferent, while a simple observation from Edmund remained in her thoughts for days. The truth became impossible to avoid. She loved him. Not despite his blindness. Not because of it. Simply because he was Edmund. The discovery brought clarity. It also introduced a new problem. Edmund seemed determined never to acknowledge what existed between them. One evening, during a walk through Ashcombe Hall's gardens, Mina attempted to draw him toward a more honest conversation. The air smelled of fresh roses, and distant birdsong drifted across the estate. "Have you never considered marriage?" she asked. A long pause followed. "I have considered it," Edmund replied. "And?" "And some considerations are wiser left unrealized." His answer irritated her. "That sounds remarkably pessimistic." "It sounds realistic." She stopped walking. "You speak as though happiness belongs exclusively to other people." Edmund's expression softened. "Happiness belongs to many people, Mina. But not to you?" He turned his face toward the breeze. "I have learned not to expect what cannot reasonably be mine." The words lingered between them long after the conversation ended. Mina understood his meaning. He believed his blindness made him unworthy of the future he desired. The realization broke her heart. Weeks later, London hosted one of the season's most prestigious charity galas. The event attracted politicians, nobles, industrialists, and nearly every prominent figure in society. Both Mina and Edmund attended. Throughout the evening, Mina watched him navigate the gathering with quiet dignity, despite the constant scrutiny directed toward him. Then she overheard a conversation that altered everything. Several noblewomen stood nearby discussing potential marriages. One woman laughed lightly before remarking, "Poor Duke Ashcombe. He will probably die unmarried." Another agreed. "What woman would willingly choose such a life?" The group exchanged sympathetic smiles. To them, Edmund's future seemed obvious. Their assumptions were delivered casually, almost kindly, which somehow made them more offensive. Mina felt anger rise within her. Not because strangers misunderstood him. Because he had begun believing them. For months she had watched him deny his own worth. She had listened as he dismissed the possibility of happiness before it could disappoint him. Suddenly she could no longer tolerate it. The decision formed with startling certainty. Before courage could abandon her, she left the ballroom and sought him out. She found him alone in a quiet sitting room away from the crowd. The distant sound of music filtered through the walls. Edmund rose when he heard her enter. "Mina? Is something wrong?" Her heart pounded. Everything about Victorian society insisted she should wait. Everything about convention demanded patience. Yet she was tired of conventions. Tired of fear. Tired of watching the man she loved hide from his own future. She stepped closer. "No," she said softly. "Something is finally right." Confusion crossed his features. For a moment neither spoke. Then, gathering every ounce of courage she possessed, Mina asked the question that would change both their lives forever. "If I were the one asking," she said, her voice trembling despite her determination, "would you marry me?" For several seconds after Mina's question, the room remained completely silent. Edmund stood motionless beside the fireplace, convinced he had misunderstood her words. His heart pounded so fiercely that it drowned out the distant music drifting through the walls. "Mina," he said carefully, "I do not believe I heard you correctly." She stepped closer. "You heard me perfectly." The certainty in her voice shook him more than the proposal itself. No hesitation. No uncertainty. No trace of pity. Only conviction. Edmund lowered his head and released a slow breath. For months he had imagined countless impossible futures. In every one of them, Mina eventually chose someone younger, stronger, and more suitable. He had trained himself to accept that outcome long before it could arrive. Yet now she stood before him offering the very thing he had forbidden himself to hope for. "You should not say such things lightly," he whispered. "I am not speaking lightly. You deserve better." The answer came instantly. "Better than what?" "Better than me." The pain beneath those words finally revealed itself. For years society had repeated the same message until Edmund had accepted it as truth. His title made him valuable. His fortune made him desirable. But the man himself was somehow less. Mina refused to let him hide behind that belief any longer. She reached for his hand. "Look at me, Edmund." A faint smile touched his lips. "You know I cannot." "Then listen." He became still. "You are the kindest man I have ever known. You are the wisest man I have ever met. You have given comfort to people who had none and hope to people who believed they had been forgotten. If you truly think I could admire all of that and not love you, then you understand women far less than you believe." Emotion tightened his throat. No one had ever spoken to him that way. Not as a duke. Not as a responsibility. Not as a tragedy. As a man worthy of love. The walls he had spent a decade building began to crack. "What if one day you regret this?" he asked quietly. "I won't." "What if society turns against you?" "I do not care." "What if people laugh?" Mina smiled softly. "They already do." For the first time that evening, Edmund laughed. The sound carried both relief and disbelief. Then silence settled between them once more. A gentler silence. One filled with understanding rather than uncertainty. Finally, he lifted her hand and pressed it carefully between both of his. "If this is truly what you want," he said, his voice unsteady, "then there is nothing in this world I want more." Tears gathered in Mina's eyes. "Is that a yes?" "It is." The answer changed everything. News of their engagement spread across England with astonishing speed. Within days, newspapers printed articles filled with speculation. Drawing rooms buzzed with gossip. Ballrooms echoed with whispered theories. Many believed Mina had acted from compassion. Others claimed she sought attention. A few insisted the marriage would never happen. Very few understood the simple truth. They loved one another. The criticism reached both of them, but neither allowed it to alter their decision. Instead, they spent the following months preparing for a future together. During that time, something remarkable happened. Edmund changed. Not dramatically. Not overnight. But gradually. The guarded man who had hidden from disappointment began allowing himself to imagine happiness. He spoke more freely. He laughed more often. He no longer treated hope as an enemy. Mina noticed every change. Each one strengthened her certainty that she had chosen correctly. When their wedding day finally arrived, the ceremony reflected their relationship perfectly. Elegant without extravagance. Beautiful without excess. The church was filled not only with nobles but also with villagers, veterans, and families whose lives Edmund had quietly improved over the years. Many arrived expecting to witness an unusual marriage. Instead, they witnessed genuine devotion. As Mina walked toward him, sunlight streamed through stained glass windows and painted the stone floor with colors. Edmund could not see the scene. Yet he knew exactly when she entered. Her footsteps told him. The faint tremble in her breathing told him. The overwhelming emotion in his chest told him. When they exchanged vows, there was no uncertainty left between them. Only trust. The years that followed unfolded with a quiet happiness neither had expected. Their marriage was not built upon grand gestures or dramatic declarations. It grew through ordinary moments. Shared breakfasts. Long conversations beside fireplaces. Walks through gardens scented with roses. Evenings spent reading together while rain tapped gently against windows. Their love deepened not because life was perfect, but because they faced every challenge together. Yet one fear remained hidden within Mina's heart. Occasionally, she wondered whether Edmund secretly mourned the life he had lost. Whether some part of him still longed to see the world again. Most of all, she wondered if he wished he could see her. The question haunted her more than she admitted. One autumn evening, several years after their wedding, she finally gathered the courage to ask. They sat alone in the library, while a storm rumbled beyond the estate. "Do you ever wish you could see me?" she asked softly. The question lingered in the air. Edmund did not answer immediately. "Every day," he admitted. The response struck her harder than she expected. A sadness she had carried for years surfaced unexpectedly. Tears filled her eyes. "I knew it." He frowned. "Knew what?" "That I can never give you everything." Emotion cracked her voice. If you could see, you would know what I look like. You would see every smile and every expression. Sometimes I think I have taken something from you simply by loving you. For a moment, Edmund said nothing. Then he reached for her hands. His touch was gentle. Steady. Certain. Mina, he said quietly, you still do not understand. She looked at him through tears. I know your footsteps before you enter a room. I know your laughter before anyone else hears it. I know when you are worried from a single breath, and when you are happy from the way your voice changes. His own eyes glistened. I know your heart better than sight could ever teach me. Tears slipped down Mina's cheeks. Edmund's voice broke as he continued. Others see your face. I see the woman behind it. The words shattered every remaining doubt. A sob escaped her. She moved toward him without hesitation. Edmund opened his arms. She wrapped herself around him, and he held her tightly against his chest. For years they had carried private fears. For years they had protected one another from truths that needed to be spoken. Now those fears finally dissolved. Mina cried against his shoulder. Edmund cried with her. Neither tried to hide their tears. Neither felt ashamed. They simply held each other as the storm raged outside, and gratitude filled the quiet space between them. After everything they had endured, they finally understood the same truth. The world had once laughed at the blind duke. The world had once doubted the young duchess. But neither title nor appearance had brought them together. Love had. And as they stood embracing one another through tears, neither wanted to let go.